So hello everyone and welcome to the Renewable Energy Leaders podcast. I'm Aurea Bond. Today I have the pleasure of being joined by Connor, co-CEO of Hawthorn Renewables. Connor is a client of mine that I've been working closely with for a few months in a really exciting period for these guys. And I think just to start with, I think it'd be good for yourself, Connor, if you could just introduce yourself and explain to me a little bit more about your background.
Sure, Jake, and thanks for inviting me on. My name is Connor Grogan. I have been working in solar since I graduated as an engineer in 2010. I'm a mechanical engineer. I went to London to do a renewable energy engineering master's in 2009, finishing in 2010. And pretty much been working in solar ever since. Started in Spain. I was working in an asset management company and a remote monitoring company for a few years. So that's how I, got into the solar world. And then moved to Brighton, and the solar market had just kind of kicked off in the UK at that point. So the market was pretty hot with the feed-in tariff subsidy. I worked with a company called OST Energy there. They were a big technical advisory company. So did a couple of years there. That was really good, great experience. And then I moved back to Dublin, and I worked in a development company. We were developing projects in the UK. So that's kind of when I first got into pure development and, earned my stripes a little bit there. That was a lot of fun as well, being kind of predominantly with small kind of high growth companies, which taught me a lot in both of those instances. So that was my time in BNRG Renewables in Dublin. In the meantime, I did another master's in renewable energy finance. I was kind of interested not only in the technical side of things, but how projects are funded, financed, and constructed as well. So I did that. It was the first intake of candidates into that master's program in Dublin in a university called DCU. Then I guess kind of a big leap in 2016/2017 over to the US. As you mentioned, company, and I'm sure we'll get into it at the moment, is called Hawthorn Renewables, but we were called Sulla Solar when we first set up in 2017. I moved to Portland, Oregon. We set up headquarters there. We did and have done a lot of development, early stage projects, kind of 3 to 5 megawatt projects, all in Oregon. So far, and that's taken me up to the start of this year, to Hawthorn Renewables.
Understood, and thank you for giving us an insight into that, Connor. And as we mentioned, it'd be great to talk a little bit more about the history of Hawthorn. So just talk me through that for you guys.
Yeah, sure. I guess with Sulla Solar, we were pretty successful. We developed and sold three portfolios totaling around 150 megawatts or around 150 million dollars worth when constructed. So, very happy with our progress there, especially after having started from scratch, over in the US. I suppose when you do things maybe for the third time, you might think of kind of scaling up a bit or switching things up, and that's what I wanted to do. We went to market for potential funders in 2022. you know, potential new investors, our old investors we worked very well with, and they were great to work with, a small private equity company in London, actually. But they, you know, we wanted to kind of a bigger, more sophisticated partner to facilitate our transition into bigger projects that we can talk about later. We talked to a few folks, you know, a few people had approached us as well. A lot of people in Europe want to get involved in the US, and they don't necessarily know, you know, with kind of first degree people that are working there. Colin and I have, you know, we've a good network in Europe. And so we got approached by a few people. We ran, you know, kind of an informal tender, and we decided to partner with the company and their funders. So it's kind of a three-way partnership. The one of the partners is Power Capital. They're a development company in Ireland. Their funders are a private equity company in Paris called Omnes Capital. And so that's kind of the three-way partnership that we're working in at the moment. And that's, you know, how Hawthorne came about. So we brought to them our business plan of developing larger projects, bringing them through constructing and operating for them to be large projects, and for them to be in different states than we're working in at the moment. So they were really excited. We're really excited to work with them. Power Capital are the biggest developer in Ireland at the moment. They're building the first big projects, 250 megawatts and above, which for Ireland is you know, considerable. And then their funder is Omnes Capital, have invested and exited from a lot of development companies in Europe, they have a company in Australia, but I think other than that, we're their first outside Europe. They wanted to get involved in the US and wanted to do so kind of via an existing company that they already had a relationship with. So they're the kind of the stakeholders and the, you know, the people behind the wheel in Hawthorne Renewables.
Mm-hmm. Understood. And as you mentioned, obviously, you know, given your background there, Connor, obviously from Europe, you know, what was the reason behind that move to the US?
Yeah, good question. I guess I had, yeah, worked in kind of the, you know, the industries in Spain, in the UK, and the Irish market there was some talk of it being brought into it materializing. And I did kind of have some interest in that maybe in 2017 when I was thinking of perhaps, you know, doing something myself. But I suppose, you know, relatively speaking, the Irish market is pretty small. I knew a lot of the players in it. I still do. And the policy makers, the policy is in there now. They have they're building projects, as I mentioned, in Ireland now, but it was on the cusp of being brought in for quite a few years between, you know, 2015 right up to 2020. So kind of glad I didn't put my eggs in that basket, although I'm sure a lot of people, you know, did and probably were successful in it. You know, I guess I was excited about trying somewhere else. And the US, obviously the land of opportunity, as they say, just the scale in comparison to what we're used to dealing with over here is totally different. You know, it's effectively a full European market over there. Each market it has its similarities and its differences. So you can be a kind of a US developer focused in one market or focused in a few markets or countrywide. I guess the scale was attractive to us. They at the time had a lower amount of solar per capita number than average in the world, which is kind of surprising for, you know, such a powerhouse and a superpower. They still do, I think, are slightly below the, you know, the penetration of solar per person on average. So, you know, we wanted to get involved, I guess. We looked for markets over there. They still have a thing called the Renewable Portfolio Standard, and it's a federally mandated standard that each state needs to choose a target that they are aiming for to be fully, you know, carbon neutral, or you know, be generating all of their generation from renewable sources by 2040. And we had identified a few states that have very aggressive targets. Oregon was our first in 2017. So I guess the combination of kind of US and its ambition, its scale, and then Oregon in specific with its kind of extra ambition and scale and general desire and appetite for clean technology, made it an exciting prospect for us. So yeah, big jump. Obviously, the other side of the world, pretty much. Speak the same language, which is helpful. Doing business over there has been very interesting. I suppose setting up a company for the first time ever in the States was an interesting play. Perhaps not for everybody, but we really enjoyed it. Doing business there has been really good. It's, you know, treated us well. We've enjoyed working there. So yeah, delighted with having made that move back in 2017.
100%, kind of. And as you sort of mentioned there, obviously originally sort of started in Oregon there, and as you mentioned, you know, we're working heavily on that CNI solar, and you've obviously now mentioned moving into, you know, those bigger projects on that utility scale. What was the reason behind that, you know, starting on that smaller scale and then obviously transitioning now?
Yeah, I guess we to be blunt, our bank balance and the amount that we have available to us is a big driver. In our initial investment was around $1 million. We're now we've now around at least 150, if not up to 250 million committed for our business plan over the next 5 years. So that, you know, obviously facilitates a very different business model. When we went over to the US, we did look at some larger projects, but I won't get on into all of the details now, but from a PPA perspective, so how you sell your power, we started in this program called PERPA, and that is it's equivalent to a feed-in tariff in other markets, but it effectively gives you a set amount of a set price for your energy for the first 15 years of your project. That's very attractive. If you can lock that in, that means, you know, that as long as you can pull a project together, which is difficult enough in itself, then you're likely to have something that can pencil economically. Visibility over the economics of the project kind of attracted us towards that PERPA scheme. PERPA projects are generally between, you know, 0 and 5 megawatts. So that's kind of that's why we found our niche, or our niche, as they say over there, in those projects. Now we're in a different kind of ball game, I guess. We're still, you know, heavily involved in community solar, so we will have a team and a business model dedicated to those smaller projects, and our community solar projects. We're very excited about those. But in addition to that, you know, we have the firepower now to get involved in bigger projects. And you know, I guess it's not just having the money that we want to do that. It's you know, being able to move the dial, I guess, you know, the energy transition over there. You know, we have a big pipeline at the moment around 3 gigawatts. The average project size for that pipeline is around 100 megawatts. So, you know, that means for one project in our new pipeline, that will be a similar capacity to all of our 50 projects put together that we've developed over the last 5 years. So, you know, in terms of, and sometimes developing a small project is as much pain as developing a large project. So, you know, a lot of developers will say that. So in terms of resource, in terms of trying to get megawatts in the ground, and in terms of, you know, facilitating that kind of green transition that we're all working towards, you know, upping the scales a little bit, dedicating teams and resource and capital towards those large projects is something that we're really excited about now, being able to do.
100%. And yeah, that you obviously mentioned there, obviously earlier on as well, you've recently sort of rebranded from Sulis Solar to obviously Hawthorn Renewables now. Just explain to me the thought process and the reason why you rebranded.
Yeah, good question. You know, there was, we were happy with our Sulis Solar brand. We felt that it had a lot of reputation in Oregon. So we put a lot of thought into keeping it. Sulis means light in Irish. We, you know, the reason behind doing that was because we wanted to, I guess, make that kind of our icebreaker with landowners, with other stakeholders in, you know, when we moved over to the US. And thankfully, we were received quite well because of it. The vast majority of our competitors were native US developers, which was great. But I guess we kind of added something a little bit different, slightly different voice, slightly different accent, slightly different approach from having worked over here in Europe. So yeah, not an easy transition to make, but I suppose we, you know, kind of two things really. We now are, you know, it's not just Sulis Solar. We're now a partnership with Power Capital and with Omnes Capital. So we wanted to symbolize that kind of triumvirate of companies coming together. And also we wanted to, you know, symbolize a step up in sophistication up to kind of a larger project, you know, fully serviced development platform. We used to sell projects pre-construction, you know, in order to recycle capital. It worked well for us, but we now want to hold on to those projects. So, like I mentioned, we've kind of a three-way expansion at the moment. We are doing bigger projects, we are taking them into construction and operation, and we're doing them in more states, so not just Oregon. We're active in Washington and New Mexico at the moment as well. So yeah, two things, as I said, it's, you know, one is kind of to symbolize the come together of three stakeholders, and the second is to to symbolize a step up into kind of a new company flavor. Hawthorne is a street in Portland, which I first lived on when I was there. Walked over Hawthorne Bridge on the way into the office, swam under it sometimes as well. So we've a lot of kind of personal connection in Portland, a lot of Portland, Oregon, a lot of good memories there. Wanted to commemorate that. The majority of our pipeline at the moment is in Oregon. So although we're in different states, we still consider Oregon home. A lot of people in Portland in particular would recognize Hawthorne, especially the spelling, as the, you know, one of the main streets there. And yeah, it's gone down pretty well. We're happy. We've recently got a new logo. We're in the middle of getting a new website. You know, our landowner communications is being updated. Business cards are being printed. You know, so although we did the transaction back in April, and we have hired people since, you know, for some reason, getting that new logo in, changing emails, you know, getting business cards, website, kind of feels like it's kind of coming together now. So yeah, we're happy with the rebrand. Thanks for asking.
Good stuff. Obviously in regards to Hawthorne as well, you know, it'd be good to understand, I suppose, your guys' long-term goals for Hawthorne and how you see the sort of future unfolding for you all.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, that three-way expansion that I mentioned earlier is kind of the, you know, the high level target. So bigger projects, bringing them into construction operation and in more states. So we'll hopefully be, you know, in the industry, what they call an IPP within, you know, 5 years. That means we're generating our own power and we own the project. So that's, it's a goal for many developers. Now we, you know, have the firepower to do that. We have been operating, as you know, kind of with a light team and a light budget until now. We're lucky enough now to be able to kind of resource pretty heavily. So, you know, the last few months, as you know, we've doubled the team. We're in the market for new recruits. And 2023, I guess, is all about building the company. You know, we have our portfolio that we're working on in the background. We want to get involved in some M&A activity, so potentially buying some portfolios as well. But that's kind of 2024 onwards. In 2023, we're putting in the building blocks at the moment, you know, for that step up. We are focusing on the company itself, looking internally, you know, fixing all the cracks that we've kind of had for the last few years. Making it a good place to work, making it a good place, an easy place to hire for. We're opening up a dedicated office in Phoenix, Arizona. That's going to be our headquarters with a second office in Portland, Oregon. Really excited about that. So 2023, as I said, building blocks for Hawthorne Renewables, getting people in, people on seats and in nice offices, hopefully. Then, you know, and that started already. And we people in, which are, we've had a new team in, which we're really happy about. And so That's what we're doing at the moment. 2024, then onwards, as I said, we're going to be, that's when we kind of move on to projects. So our own projects, and look into the market to hopefully acquire some. So long-term goal is 2 gigawatts of solar projects, which is a lot. You know, we have 3 gigawatts of megawatts, 3 gigawatts of projects in the pipeline at the moment. But, you know, we usually see a kind of a 10 to 15% success rate from that. So we typically see that, and that's kind of market around 17% success rate from an early stage portfolio. So, you know, that means for, say, a 2 gigawatt successful pipeline, successful portfolio, you need to have around 10 gigawatts of a pipeline. And that's, you know, that's a pretty ambitious target. We are on the way now towards achieving that. And we're really excited about it.
Great stuff. Obviously, I know you've got sort of talked through the long-term goals for you guys, and it's definitely an exciting time for you as well. But I suppose, you know, what is the business mission for Hawthorn?
Yeah, good question. I guess the industry in general is going through a bit of a, you know, it's going through a bit of a transition at the moment, and we're hoping to kind of lead it. You know, the solar development has been, you know, developers have kind of come in with their projects, maybe built them and left, you know, and haven't maybe put too much thought into the local communities, to, you know, where they're getting solar panels. You know, it's been a race to the bottom, maybe kind of whether or not farming can happen, how to involve communities and landowners and things. And we really want to, you know, shift the mentality there. So, you know, we've been in the US for the last 5 years under Sulla Solar. We plan to be there, you know, if not 10 years, then 20, 30, 40, 40 years under Hawthorn Renewables. So we've a really long-term business plan. I think in order to do that, you need to be, I think, sustainable, and think a little bit more comprehensively as to how you're developing. So, you know, we're very ESG active, and we want to, you know, be a fully kind of fledged community-based, community-focused development company that has a reputation and of kind of integrity and trustworthiness within the industry. So, you know, some of the things in specific that we're working on, we were one of the first developers in the Oregon Community Solar Scheme. So Community Solar, for, you know, for you, or for, you probably know, but maybe for folks who don't, it was brought in, you know, maybe in 2016, 2017 into some states. It's a kind of a worldwide trend, but in the US it's really taken off. And basically what it does is it brings solar to homeowners who don't have the available income to, you know, to put it on their own roofs. So how it works is you get a project in your area or in your utility service territory, and you subscribe to it. So we look for subscribers, and people, we make that relationship between the project, say outside a town or a village in rural Oregon. And, you know, there might be 300 homeowners or around 800 residents that can kind of subscribe directly to that project. They get cheaper electricity, in particular low-income subscribers. So we offer anything between a 10 and 50% discount on electricity to low income subscribers. And that's really important. And it's kind of benefited the industry in general, actually, because, you know, the reputation for projects coming in for developers isn't specifically they're look at them, they're bringing in their project and then leaving. It's more, you know, we're here for good, both in terms of good for time and good in terms of you're getting cheaper electricity. And so that's a really good program. We've been we were an early adopter of that program. We helped in initiating it back in 2018 and 2019. We were one of the, you know, the stakeholders representing the development community in putting that scheme together, and it's been very successful. It was fully subscribed from day one. We have in and around 25% of the projects in that program since 2017. Since 2019. I think I mentioned 2017 earlier. The program was brought in January 2019. So we represent around a quarter of that whole program, which we're, you know, really happy with. And it's worked really well. Projects are in the ground now, you know, generating electricity for local low income subscribers, which we're really happy about. Another kind of thing that I guess kind of industry is being forced to deal with is kind of ethical procurement. So there, for a lot of years there was kind of a race to the bottom, a race to kind of cheaper panels for Asian equipment. And often it resulted in ethical behavior. And we, you know, want to lead the charge towards really putting a lot of thought into where we're getting our equipment, and to having people on site reviewing the equipment and panels in particular while it's being made, and not necessarily having a race to the bottom so that it, you know, from a kind of financial point of view, we're maximizing profits. Obviously, we need to make a profit, but in terms of eking out that last percentage, if it means kind of, potentially blurring lines from an ethical procurement perspective, that's not what we're going to do. Thankfully, in the US at the moment, with the with the introduction of the Inflation Reduction Act from last year, US manufacturers are being incentivized to start manufacturing their own supplies, and building is underway for a lot of facilities in order to do that. When our projects go into construction, hopefully from 2024, but especially 2025, 2026 and onwards, you know, we'll be able to source a lot of our supplies from the US, from places that are bringing jobs to, you know, to local US and especially rural facilities. The industry has as well has kind of focused on high value farmland, and there is a bit of a shift again, one that we're spearheading a movement towards dual use. So what that means is that you're not taking fully kind of high grade farm out of production, that you're actually farming it under or around the solar panels, and the technology there is really improving. One project that we developed called Canyonville the Willamette Valley in Oregon will be one of the first kind of dual use solar projects in the state, which we're really, really proud of. And I think that trend is probably something that we'll see going forward. So again, it's not just you come in, you build a project, you leave. you know, you're taking into account the industry that's already in the areas. They're more than likely remote and rural, and we totally respect landowners and what they've been doing there. And we want to facilitate a transition towards, you know, being able to generate solar on the same land as traditional farming practices are happening. So we're really happy with that. And in a similar vein, we're very landowner focused. We've always been, our real estate and landowner teams are, you know, they've farming background themselves. They've a really close connection with all of our landowners. So again, you know, the consistency in all of these things that I've spoken about is kind of you know, an integrity, a long-term view in development, that it's not just a one and done, you know, see you later. It's a, we're going to be here for a long time. Let's do things properly. Let's do things with consideration and thought from day one in how we develop projects. And I think that will, you know, facilitate us being around for a long time. So that's, you know, that's the business mission for Hawthorn.
Great stuff, Conor. No, thank you very much for explaining that. And I suppose as well, you know, you sort of mentioned sort of your integrity as well in terms of that. But, you know, what else is it that sets you guys apart from other renewable energy organisations, developers, IPPs?
Yeah, good question. I think we, you know, everything I mentioned just there, I think, does set us apart, and we're really excited about all those things. I think, you know, from a pure development point of view, you know, there's many different strategies that developers use. There isn't really a development school, you know, that people go to. So developers can kind of come from all walks of life, you know, develop their own strategies, and they all have their value. Some are, I guess, what we in the industry would be called kind of spray and pray, which is sort of speculative. You know, you kind of play the numbers, you know, attack the market, maybe send out mailers all across the country and, you know, hope that a few work out. A lot of developers would use that approach. And I guess it's fine, but what it does is it kind of clogs up the whole development environment. So as you can imagine, grid utility companies then get a lot of speculative applications. County permitting boards and state permitting boards get a lot of speculative applications, and it clogs up the system. It gives the industry a little bit of a bad, you know, rap, and people, there's kind of a knee-jerk reaction then for people to kind of shut it down either temporarily or semi-temporarily in order for the industry to kind of figure things out. You know, what we like to do is we kind of flip it on its head. So we, you know, I'm an engineer. You know, from having worked in Europe, from having kind of the two masters, both, you know, kind of technical and financial, we have a really deep understanding as to how projects work. And so we put a lot of thought into what we call our origination program, and that's how we find sites and how we contact landowners, so that it's highly scientific, highly technical. When we, our outreach is scientific and technical, so that when we get, you know, a landowner who's interested, we have a much higher kind of success rate than the industry in terms of converting that into a project, because we've done a lot of work in the front end in order to ensure as much as we can that that project will, you know, will materialize. So I think, you know, and related to something that I mentioned earlier, our relationship with our landowners, where we decided from day one to kind of focus on that, to not kind of, you know, to make them involved in as much as we can from day zero. And we're really proud about that. We've, again, heard of other developers who, you know, might have a less kind of intentions on integrity and reputation within the industry, are happy with, you know, not necessarily burning landowners, but, you know, kind of using and abusing them. And that's kind of something that we kind of decided from day zero to kind of focus on. And I think it's been, you know, it's worked in our favor in the end. We've really good relationships with all our landowners. They're very quick to refer to us. And so we get a lot of inbound calls, you know, organically from kind of word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think our origination process in general, we think sets us apart. And that's kind of, as I mentioned, a culmination of lots of things, but too broadly, it's us putting a lot of work, both technical, you know, interconnection, financial work in the front end, but also being very relatable and dependable for landowners. And we found that that, you know, combination has got us a very quick foothold in Oregon. And our reputation then there has facilitated this new transaction, which hopefully will facilitate us rolling that, you know, strategy across more markets in the Pacific Northwest.
Great stuff. And is there anything in particular, you know, particularly in terms of trends in the US market you've noticed, Connor, and I suppose how are Hawthorne dealing with them as well?
Yeah, I guess, you know, they, you know, we call it the solar coaster for a reason. That, you know, it always has its ups and downs. It's becoming more well understood, the market, you know, but it's still, say, 15, 20 years old, you know, and still competing against more traditional and older companies and industries. So there is still a little bit of that kind of up and down. You know, I guess to pick maybe one up and one down, because I could talk about this, you know, trends for a while, but, you know, in 2022, the Biden administration brought in a few policies that really helped the industry. Before that, so a lot of the bigger projects are financed using what's called tax equity, that effectively means that you're giving big companies a tax break if they invest in renewables projects. And how that's worked is that the administrations before that have kind of on the eve, or, you know, on the eve of the calendar year, you know, extended those programs for one more year, which means as an industry, you know, if you're developing a project for 2, 3, 4 years, you're not doing it with that visibility that you'd like to ensure that the market will still be there, you know, when your project comes to fruition. So that was kind of a difficult place to operate, difficult environment to do business in. So Inflation Reduction Act kind of changed all of that. You know, it's given the industry around a 10-year runway. So we went from year to year to now having a 10-year runway, which is just huge. And in addition to that, it's increased the tax equity projects can avail of from around 30% up to 70-80%. And it's you know, the policy was hugely celebrated in the industry. And we hope that it's kind of a policy that people outside the industry will benefit from as well. You know, the it's put huge incentives on people sourcing US materials from, and also kind of doing things like, you know, providing education opportunities during the construction and development of the projects in order to, you know, to kind of concrete a US solar workforce, which is really good. It also does things like it awards projects that are in areas that previously would have been very dependent upon fossil fuel generating stations. You know, so it's a very rounded piece of policy that that makes and incentivizes projects to kind of think more comprehensively about, you know, where they're putting the projects, who's going to be working on them, what impact it can have on the local community. And so hopefully, you know, copper fastening a US market, you know, for the next kind of decades to come. So that's been really good. It's only a year old. I think it passed its anniversary last week, and there's a few things that you know, still have to be ironed out. Kind of the amount of tax equity in the US at the moment has kind of reduced since it was brought in. So that's kind of you know, interest rates increasing has affected it. So you know, there's how it'll actually play out, how the policy will play out over the next few years. We will see, but it's broadly extremely positive, and we're, you know, we're very happy with it. Bad or kind of a down, I suppose, is transmission and kind of connection capabilities. And this is kind of a, you know, it's a worldwide phenomenon. Renewables really changed the game for how the grid network works. So, you know, the grid networks are the first, earliest grid networks are only, you know, 100 years or so old. But they were made with one thing in mind, and that was to transmit electricity from big remote fossil fuel generating stations to homeowners. And that's the, you know, that's the way they're built, and they work very well. But renewables is kind of flipping it on its head. Utilities have, in a lot of cases, been slow to adopt new renewables, and to really kind of think kind of blue sky about how the grid network is going to work under this new, you know, with this new technology and this new way of thinking. So there's been a lot of kind of patching up the grid network in order to facilitate renewables. And it's worked, and a lot of, you know, renewables are on the grid around the world. But the, you know, a lot of the interconnection infrastructure is now kind of creaking a little bit, you know, under this new way of thinking. Some utilities have kind of had a bit of a knee-jerk reaction in terms of sort of shutting down queues, not allowing new applications and that kind of thing, so that they can, you know, think about this. And there's not a whole lot of new transmission planned in the US. And then transmission is a really tricky thing from a policy perspective. You know, if you're a politician and you're kind of thinking of your 4 years, you know, transmission can take around 10 years to be permitted and constructed. So if you initiate it, you won't necessarily see it. And then it can be a kind of a thorny issue as well, because even environmentalists can be opposed to transmission networks, even if it facilitates new renewables being added to the network. Thankfully, you know, and we've been talking to senators in Oregon about this, and thankfully and other stakeholders and industry bodies and things, and you know, Washington is listening. There are you know, utilities in the area are kind of being forced to rework their queue processing systems to, you know, to start thinking of developing new transmission networks, because without that, you know, there won't be the scale and the targets and the really ambitious renewables targets that the program or the administration has at the moment. It's difficult to see how they'll be materialized if the interconnection can't, if the interconnection infrastructure can't facilitate it. So that's, you know, I say a bad, but hopefully there's kind of light in the end of the tunnel. There's the mood music is changing a little bit. I think people are realizing how integral it is, and there's moves towards, you know, fixing it. So how we're dealing with it, I guess, is, you know, from an Inflation Reduction Act, we're just doing what we're doing, and doing more of it. And it's, you know, it was a great story in our fundraise last year, even though we started it with the with our partners. It was a great kind of boost to our business plan. And then from a transmission perspective, you know, we are getting involved in policy to try and change things on the back end. We're also kind of developing in hopefully new transmission locations. We've really got a great grid team in Hawthorne, as we've kind of identified that as a key, you know, business area that we need to really recruit top tier individuals in. We're dealing with it. We're dealing with both. There's plenty of other trends that I could talk about that we're dealing with as well day to day, but maybe for another day.
Great stuff, Connor. And look, that brings us to the end of this episode. Again, thank you very much, Connor, for joining me today. It's been insightful and sort of fascinating as well to understand more about Hawthorne, your journey so far, your mission, and obviously some very exciting plans for the future as well. Obviously, please do join us for our next episode, where we'll cover more exciting topics with another renewable energy leader.
Thanks, Jake.